programmed not to recognise swearing. So all year there have been people, pensioners, children, all sorts of corners of society stood over it going, go on, try piss. Everyone been there?
Yeah.
What's the rudest thing you can get it to say?
Leeds.
Leeds. I love the way it's had to be adapted to understand a Hull accent, isn't it? That's brilliant. Otherwise, all year there'd have been crowds of people going, why won't it write Coca-Cola? Must be some sort of advertising rights issue. And it picks up everything, everything. So if no one's there actually deliberately saying it, it just picks up the nearest thing to it, doesn't it? So there must have been times when it's lit up things like, hello, Janet, it's Simon here. I've booked the hotel in Scarborough. My wife can't possibly find out. One of the first works of art created for the City of Culture Year was the Sea of Hull installation by Spencer Tunick, who said, it was inspiring to intertwine the city's maritime heritage against an urban backdrop. Which sounds traditional, doesn't it? A sunset over the docks, perhaps. But in the end, it was thousands of you lying naked together on the road, painted blue. And there were 3,200 people who turned up for it, including one man who sent me a message very, very proudly saying, I was there, Mark. My balls were on the front page of The Guardian. Chris, where's Chris? Right, Chris, so you were one of the 3,200 in this sort of grand piece of work.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And early in the morning must have been freezing, wasn't it?
So, we were told to get to Queen's Gardens for 2 o'clock in the morning. The artist, he rolled up, run through what the itinerary's going to be. And then when he'd done that, he said, right, undress. And there was kind of a nanosecond where 3,200 people just, like, looked at each other. And then we started getting undressed. Most people seemed to be in groups of friends and family and whatever. But I went on my own, and I'm there on my own, painting away, and there's a guy in front of me. He's on his own as well, this old guy, and he's painted himself. And when he looked as though he'd finished, I realised that he'd missed a long... A line straight down the middle of his back, which he probably thought he'd covered or he'd tried to cover. And then I realised, well, I'm probably the same. My back's probably missing some paint as well. So we're both obviously naked at this point. I thought, well, somebody's got to make the first move here. So I kind of shuffled across to him and I stood next to him and said, all right, mate. And he went, yeah. So look, it's... kind of like this, you've got some white bits on your back and I've got some white bits on my back. I'll do you if you do me. So I did his back and he did mine and we swapped our paint tubs around and then there was like this awkward few seconds where we just kind of stood next to each other, not speaking, staring out across Queen's Gardens and I just said, yeah, I'll see you later, mate. And I went back to my clothes and that was it. I never saw him again. But...
You've not kept in touch?
Strangely enough, no.
Thanks very much, Chris Green. Yes. Thank you very much. But one of the greatest pieces of culture in the area, obviously, is your Humber Bridge, a feat of the most extraordinary engineering. At one point, the longest suspension bridge that you could walk over in the world, finally connecting the north side of the estuary to Lincolnshire in the way that people had dreamed of for hundreds of years. Under one article about the complex engineering involved, the first comment was, I've been living for nearly 13 years in Cottingham. I've never crossed the Humber Bridge as there's no reason to go to Lincolnshire. But it is amazing. Even if you don't want to go anywhere, it's just amazing, this bridge. And to drive across, it's only £1.50. And then for that, you get to see Barton on Humber. Which is tiny and almost entirely under the bridge and is described on one website as very much equidistant from Hull, Scunthorpe and Grimsby, the Golden Triangle. I was told by someone who seemed perfectly reliable that when the Channel Tunnel was being built, someone in Hull, who never left Hull, asked this person, why are they building a tunnel? There's already a bridge. Because they thought the Humber Bridge went to France. But the City of Culture of the Year, clearly a huge success, because this is a cultural city, it's an independent culture. So the most famous piece of art in Hull for decades was a piece of graffiti on a corrugated iron shed by the river of an upside-down bird with the words...
Dead bod.
Dead bod. Hull for dead bird. And that's just written. And it was painted by a trawlerman called Pongo in the 1960s. And it was adored so much that when the sheds were being pulled down, there was a huge campaign to save the dead bod sheet of corrugated iron. And now the whole thing is in the art gallery. And there's an art critic who's written a piece about it that goes, the piece is reminiscent of David Shrigley, a visual artist known for crude compositions... and rather mordant humour. But maybe you always had this sense of independence in Hull. It's always been a radical city, plenty of angry Puritans back in the 1500s, partly because you've always been backwards and forwards to Holland, which, of course, is only just over the road. And eventually, Hull was so militantly Protestant that it played a vital role in British history that you're clearly very proud of. You started the English Civil War. The king came to Hull in 1642 to fetch some weapons, but the town governor, Sir John Hotham, under pressure, shut the Beverley Gate and refused to let him in. So the king went to Nottingham and declared war. And Hull loves this. You know all the war, all them battles and people killed with swords. We started that. And you were probably right cocky at the time as well. In the name of the king, open the gate! It's not a gate, it's a Majesty Rebellion. And then when the town was surrounded in a siege, the people of Hull diverted the river to swamp the king's army. And then when he was executed, I expect you drew a picture of him upside down with the words, Dead King. And then there was a member of Parliament that you had during the Civil War, Andrew Marvell, the poet, and he was the main figure of opposition to the royal family through satirical poetry. For example, in 1664, he wrote this satirical poem, some folk are regal, believing it legal to act like a wicked barbarian, but others may wish they'll be down with the fish in the planet's first ever submarine. And one of the most brilliant pieces of history you can view here is in the George pub, which boasts it has the smallest window in the world. And it is an impressively small window, I'll grant you that. Very thin, about half a centimetre, but the most ridiculous claim that anyone has to a world record. All you've got to do is put a bit of blue tack on it, and then you've beaten your own record, haven't you? It's stupid. It's a mad record. It's the sort of record that Donald Trump would make up. Isn't it? And then it was fishing and trawlers and docks, and Hull was bombed again and again in the war. And this is one account from a writer after a night of bombing. At one house, which was completely destroyed, a woman, black with soot, was asked by a general where her husband was, and the woman immediately replied, he's fighting in Libya, the coward. after the war, Hull became the centre of immigration. Tens of thousands of Lithuanians, Poles, Ukrainians came over here. There were already hundreds of Chinese in Hull by the time of the Second World War, and you have to feel for them. How are the Chinese supposed to learn English in Hull? I'll have a can of Coke. And dry white wine. But this is a hugely diverse city with your two rugby league clubs, Hull Kingston Rovers, called the Robins, and the more imaginatively titled Hull. And it feels like a friendly rivalry, really. There's no actual tension. In fact, there were plans to merge the clubs at one point, which shows how well you got on. although one person who was in favour of the merger said, I'm black and white through and through. I won't even have Robins in my garden. I got two cats specially to kill them. And that was Roy Waldby, who was president of Hull. The simplest explanation I've heard as to why there's a rivalry is Hull comes from West Hull, the fishing area, and Hull Kingston Rovers from East Hull, which is the docks area. Hull started in the east, though, and moved to the west, whereas Hull Kingston Rovers started in the west and moved to the east. So that's brilliantly Hull, isn't it? So determined to be independent and argumentative, the different bits of you want to be independent from each other, and if the other one moved to your side, you move to their side to carry on moaning about the other one. I bet if whole people get in an argument and one says, all right, then you've won me round. I agree with you. The other one says, what are you agreeing with me for? I was talking shite. And, of course, you've got William Wilberforce, the man who spent so much of his life fighting for slavery to be outlawed. And you celebrate him wonderfully. Not only is there a museum, but according to your tourist leaflet, there is now a yearly freedom festival held in Hull celebrating the abolition of slavery with acts like girl band The Saturdays. And I think that's the ideal way to celebrate it. It's hard to think of any act that more encapsulates the triumph of freedom and the cleansing of the soul at the heart of the abolition of this cruel and inhuman practice than The Saturdays. Wilberforce was living in Wimbledon with his uncle and he became a Methodist, opposed to drink, and even the theatre was considered the work of the devil. So his mum insisted he left Wimbledon and came to Hull to get him out of his Methodist ways, as Hull was so debauched. You must be proud of that. He kept some of his Methodist ideals, Wilberforce, and he stood for election here as free man of Hull, and a stone was thrown at him, right, while he was speaking. And according to William Hay wrote a really good book, actually, about Wilberforce. And according to William Hay's book, the local butcher, Johnny Bell, approached Wilberforce and said, I've found out who threw the stone at you, and I'll kill him tonight. And Wilberforce told him, no, you must only frighten him. He was elected as MP for Hull and went to Parliament, where he gambled and drank, and he was apparently a fine singer, and he got a reputation for being a brilliant mimic. And this is the sort of thing your Wilberforce Museum should be full of. I mean, fair enough, mention the abolition of slavery if you want, but your MP in 1780 was a gambling, drinking, womanising, singing mimic who got the butcher to frighten people. That's fantastic! This is how we won his campaign. Who's this coming into Newsnight studio? It's me old friend Andy Murray. Oh, I'm really happy that slavery was abolished. It's got to take it one piece of legislation at a time. And he carried on drinking and staying up all night until he had a crisis, and he decided he would devote the rest of his life to God. And he wrote himself a series of strict rules. This is Wilberforce's strict rules when he decided to abandon all the debauchery. From now on, no desserts. Always in... Always in bed by 11, and at dinner, no more than 6 glasses of wine. That's brilliantly Hull, isn't it? You hear about William, he's become a monk. At dinner he only has 6 glasses of wine. At one point he wrote, my endeavours at leading a sober life suffered a setback this evening, for I was attracted by the environs of a gentleman's club known as Spiders and confessor now furnishing a love bite from whence I know not. And while the museum is one thing to do in Hull, the Hull Daily Mail gets it in perspective by not even mentioning it amongst the 21 things to do in Hull. But it does mention number 12, give the bee lady some change. It says, arguably Hull's greatest living citizen, Jean Bishop, has been dressing as a bee and collecting money for charity in Hull City Centre for more than a decade. And that's just lovely that you'll give money to charity like that as long as it's collected by a 93-year-old woman dressed as a bee. Otherwise, it's I'm not giving money to that hospice. The collector's only 85 and dressed as a moth. John Venn, who invented the Venn diagram, he was from Hull. Although, annoyingly, someone from Grimsby then claimed that they invented a diagram called an overlapathon, although it's exactly the same. But the funny thing is that it's brilliant that it comes from Hull, the Venn diagram, because if you were in a Venn diagram, it would have a million things overlapping all the different aspects of Britain connecting with each other, and then over here, in one bit, all on its own, overlapping with nothing. Ooh. Your food is magnificently independent here as well. You've got patty butties. Kerry, where's Kerry? I'd like to introduce you to Kerry, because, first of all, what is a patty butty? Because, unbelievable as it may seem, some people in the country might not know.
Well, it's potato with some herbs and spices battered.
So when you have, like, patty and chips, that's...
Yeah, that's potato with potato. Yeah.
And you were telling us about... Was it your gran? You were with your gran, and you were outside Hull.
Yes, and wanted... patty and chips.
Where was this?
It was just outside. It was in Edinburgh.
Right.
And
that's where the Humber Bridge goes, isn't it?
Yeah. So she wanted patty and chips, and this guy in the chip shop wasn't understanding, offering her fish cake and other delights that she wasn't interested in. So. Getting angry with him, not understanding, she actually just turned around and said, "Oh, forget it, I won't have patty and chips, just do me a patty butty."
I've got a book called Me Sannies or Brannies that says, "When I moved to Hull, I went to the fish shop and was offered cutfish. What on earth was cutfish? No one in the chip shop knew what it was. It was just fish that had been cut." So the biggest fishing pool in the world didn't offer cod, haddock or plaice, just fish. According to the book, and I've no idea if this is right or not, hard on is the Hull expression for sound asleep. As in, he was hard on when she came to bed. Do you not find some of your expressions lead to confusion? Divorces, as this called. It is like being in a Two Ronnies sketch here sometimes. You have conversations like, "Why has he left the pub? He's gone out for a smirk. Which cigarettes does he smirk? No, a smirk. He's going to half grin at the man on the fern. Who's he calling? No, he's on the fern, the grassy heather by the pub, the fern. Oh, yeah, he stood in a turd. It's not a turd, it's a frog." I imagine you have arguments here, like, we went out for a cream tea and my mate asked for a buttered skirn. I said, "It's not a skirn, it's a skirn." And then the book goes on, "The most recent controversy was when the regeneration people introduced a new logo consisting of a cog with the word Hull in it with a small H. All hell was let loose." And I can imagine it would be. Who do they think they bloody are? We're all without pronouncing a capital H. Not all without pronouncing a little H. You're modern enough to have a submarium, which I went in, and I have to concede it does have fish in it, unlike aquariums. My favourite was a grumpy-looking thing called a white epaulette shark, which is really rare, actually, because outside Hull, all epaulette sharks are red. And... But that's the point of Hull. It's not quite Britain. It looks like it, mostly, but everything's slightly askew. Your phone boxes and your orange chip salt and your funny names for things and streets with names like the Land of Green Ginger. Like you've opted out of all the normal rules. You're a permanent city of culture. And the way the world's going, you'll be independent soon, Hull, and then you can start fighting over East Hull and West Hull, and you'll be happy then. So I will leave you, Hull, and thank you very much for being delightful and independent. I will leave you, Hull, with a famous poem from one of your most famous sons, Philip Larkin, who so adored his adopted city that he wrote of his affection for it with these lines. "It mucks you up, the town of Hull. It means to, and it does. The barman serves you with a skull, collecting women buzz. Our ferns are white, we're near the coast, we haven't an aquarium, that's not a bridge, that is the first Humber Cross Alarium.
Mark Steele's In Town was written and performed by Mark Steele.
With additional material by Pete Sinclair.
It was produced in Hull by Kyle Cooper.
It was a BBC Studios production.
Lovely hills.
It's probably the microclimate.
It's botanical gardens.
Crab pastas.
Yeah, you can't beat it. Yeah, for hills.
Should there be a tunnel to the mainland?
Oh, that's controversial.
I think yes.
Absolutely no.
Yes.
Absolutely not. No tunnel to the mainland.
Well, because I'm under 30, I think there should be a tunnel.
The whole point of the Isle of Wight is that it's an island.
I don't think we should be isolated.
What's the worst thing about Ventnor?
You genuinely can get mobile signal from France and be charged extra.
In the summer it smells a little bit.
It's the finest town in the country, if not the world.
There's nowhere else quite like it.
Mark Steele's In Town.
Thanks so much, and welcome to Mark Steele's In Town, which comes this week from the very, very lively people of Ventnor on the Isle of Wight, an area... a splendid area known for its modern outlook and its... and its youthful population. A place racing along at such a pace, it's already got to 1954. Tea bags will be accepted any day soon. And one of the clever things that you've done here in Ventnor is attracted lots and lots of old people, but to a place where everywhere is a 1 and 3 gradient so the poor sods can't walk up and leave. Means you have the most wonderful set of noises here, Ventnor. Waves lapping soulfully against the shore, seagulls gently chirping, and old people in first gear going up zigzag road. Going, I think we've done another clutch in, dear. One of your main boasts here on all the tourist brochures is that you've got the biggest concentration of Jurassic fossils in the world here, made from dinosaurs that lived 65 million years ago, although the fossils here are from dinosaurs that lived 65 million and 60 years ago, as they were a bit behind the rest. And what I love about Ventnor is it's not enough that the Isle of Wight is cut off from the rest of Britain. Ventnor likes to be cut off from the rest of the Isle of Wight. It's an island within an island, and I was delighted that someone who showed me round as his opening line to me as I got in his car said, first things first, Ventnor is the capital of the world, Sandown is a despicable hovel. Just a couple of statistics here. In the EU referendum, there was a 62% vote to leave, although, to be fair, that doesn't make the island anti-Europe, as most of those thought they were voting to leave Britain. Except here in Ventnor, where you thought you were voting to leave the Isle of Wight. And this must be the sort of attitude that makes it so attractive to young people growing up here. Who love it so much that some of them stay here for much of their lives, right up until the age where they can physically walk up the hill and get a bus to the hovercraft. But there is a reason that people love it here, which is summed up in the town motto, we've got a microclimate, you know. What do you think about that? The tourist brochure starts, Ventnor is famed for its microclimate, making it an ideal spot with the ideal climate for the ideal holiday. An Island Visitor magazine says, Ventnor, located in its unique microclimate. And this is the first thing that any of you say about the place, usually with some bogus science to make it sound right. Oh, we've got a microclimate here because of the southeast-facing cliffs, so cold can't get round the corners, and the angle of our leaves attracts heat bouncing off the English Channel, so we can grow pineapples on our roofs. And if you fall asleep in the garden, a cactus forms on your head. And they've done experiments with camels where they can't stand the heat on the undercliff because it's hotter than the Sahara. And Saudi Arabian women like it here because their princes let them wear bikinis because they say even we wouldn't let them wear a burqa in this heat. Is it can be gorgeously boiling here and at the same time everyone's freezing to death in Sandown. If you think I'm exaggerating, the book Ventnor, Isle of Wight, tells us the meadows and streams of Ventnor give way to something much more exotic. The Undercliff's vegetation has elements of the Amazon jungle about it. Now, it can be sunny at times, but the Amazon jungle? How deluded are you? At least in Sandown, you're only likely to get mugged at a cash point. Here, you'll get captured by a lost tribe firing blowpipes. The book Victorians in Search of Winter Health tells us observers regarded Ventnor as bearing comparison to the island of Madeira. The Portuguese island of Madeira, that's just off Morocco, south of Tangiers. To be fair, I have heard people from Madeira say there are a lot of steep hills in Madeira, which makes it much like Ventnor. And also, many of us in Madeira, we like to say that Sandown is a despicable hovel. Now, at this point, I'd like to make a defence of Sandown, because if anyone says it's dull in any way, I would simply refer them to a headline in the Isle of Wight Courier that illustrates the level of excitement, not just in Sandown, but across the island. It was a front-page headline, and it went, "Burnt lasagna fills room with smoke." I simply cannot understand why this wasn't picked up by the International News Agency. It went on, "A lasagna left cooking in an oven at Clancy's Coffee House in Sandown has been removed from the building." Oh, thank Christ for that. "Firefighters attended and the burnt food was doused with a hose reel. The road remains open, as does the high street." So you kept the road open even while a lasagna was burning. You take risks here, don't you? Even that was at the end of it, because the Courier's website told us later, "Update, 1755, the Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service have now left the scene." But you have a naturally exciting town because you're blessed with a thrilling level of subsidence. What you lack in entertainment that can keep the young people from leaving, you more than make up for with the thrill of having no idea when you come home whether your kitchen's fallen 300 yards down a cliff. According to Wikipedia, a significant area is built on clay. The ground is notoriously unstable and many buildings and amenities have been lost to subsidence. There is a local expression, "We live near the sea and are getting nearer every day." Must be brilliant. Like when a guest says, "Can you tell me where the toilet is?" You have to say, "Not with any certainty, no." It might be on the stairs up on the left, or it might be halfway to Guernsey. Who knows? You're so wobbly here, you get stories like the one from the county press that says, "Fallen horse rescued by two fire crews." The fire service are rust off their feet here, aren't they? But of course everything falls over, everything's on a steep slope, everything's collapsing. Here's another story, accident-prone horse falls in cesspit. Owner of the field in Knighton Road, Angela Morrish, said, "I wasn't surprised, that horse is a nightmare. He falls over in fields for no reason." She went on, "He's so clumsy, he's the Norman Wisdom of horses." Sometimes the Isle of Wight does make the national news, like the parents who took their son out of school. Because a boy in his class was wearing a dress and they said that made him confused. But of course he was confused, not because of the dress. He lives on the Isle of Wight. The poor thing gets told he's living in a place that's like being next to Africa. There are dinosaur fossils, a burnt lasagna's front page news. The boy in a dress is the least confusing thing he sees all day. So much excitement here. Apparently, even though it's 60 miles away and therefore impossible to see according to the laws of physics because of the curvature of the Earth, lots of you reckon that from Ventnor you can see France. And not only that, several people have told me this, you see it upside down. columnist in the Isle of Wight Courier wrote this. I promise I'll make it up. What causes people to think they can see France from Ventnor is a freak of nature known as a superior mirage. A coast guard once told me he was on Ventnor Golf Course and was able to describe in details the coast of Cherbourg, including the vehicles along the seafront. It may sound mad, but it's true. It is honestly, Ventnor. From here you can see all the other countries upside down. Look out the window, there's the Taj Mahal, upside down. Have you all seen it? Twice? Is William with us? William's the first. Can we go to William? Because William, who runs a shop, don't you, down in the main road there. So try and explain to the good people, and mostly to me, how you managed to see France even though you can't.
My friend Wateringham Pete reckoned he could see it one day. I thought this was impossible. However, while sat on the balcony, it had been a balmy, balmy day. And over France, in the stratosphere, the air was very cool, with water crystals and vapours forming. When this happens, what's below can be mirrored in what's above. And therefore, though geographically impossible, Nipper, we saw it.
William, that's magnificent. Not only is that going to go out on this programme, it'll also be repeated in Book of the Week as a poem. The book Ventnor, Town of a Thousand Steps, explains a different way of seeing France a little bit more scientifically. It says, honestly it says this, the hill above the town is so high that as you stand on the top, you can imagine seeing France. It's a living science lesson here. The first thing you read on the local website is, the Isle of Wight was formed at the end of the last ice age about 8,000 to 9,000 years ago. Although, strictly speaking, Ventnor didn't actually have an ice age, just a slightly cooler age. A sort of slush age. When you had to put a jumper on in the evening. Now, one reason why Ventnor can seem apart from the rest of the island is you're not all that easy to get to. To start with, you've got the water to cross from magical places with names like Portsmouth and Southampton and Southsea that are on a much bigger island where there's more than one co-op and the average age is under 67. And the hovercraft. I love that. Do people come on the ferry or the hovercraft if you ever go? A little bit of a split. Most of us, 4 hovercraft, 2 ferry. The rest of you never, ever go that far. I love the hovercraft. It's so majestically tatty. It's like a bus. It's just like an old bus. It just buzzes off the wall, vroom, onto the concrete. You hop on and it goes off again within seconds. There's a really bored announcement that goes, welcome aboard. This takes 8 minutes. If we tip up, just bobble about a bit and climb on the ferry. And then it zips past everything to ride and then you get straight off again and then you're ready to enjoy the most luxurious railway network in the world. Beautiful, vast system of interconnected lines hurtling through the countryside at speeds that can reach up to 3 miles an hour. Wonderfully crafted seats that are so well designed they even managed to bounce up and down when the train stood still. I love that train. It was bought off London Underground. But it's not a recent tube train. It's one from the 1930s, making it a full 20 years out of date, even for the Isle of Wight. It just rattles so much that if you're just looking down and reading, you think you must be whipping through the island and liable to take off, while people in Cherbourg go, my God, there appears to be an upside-down flying underground train. But then you look up and you're barely moving while it's going clang, clatter, 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 poof, clang, ding, ding, like your main method of transport here is a milk float. And it's... And if you find a newspaper on the seat, you expect it to tell you the king's abdicated. It's brilliant. And one consequence of this railway is it attracts railway enthusiasts. So you get books such as the one I've got there, Trains on the Isle of Wight, which informs us, when the green paint ran out, grey was used instead on one of the carriages. See, there's loads of entertainment on the Isle of Wight. But even that train doesn't get you to Ventnor because there used to be two stations here, but the whole line was shut down in the 60s. So now the train only goes as far as Shanklin, which means Sandown has a station, but Ventnor doesn't. So it's a good job that there's no sense of rivalry between any of you in any way. Well, that might be a source of some friction. So to get to Ventnor, you then need to get a bus. But luckily, the bus goes two or three times a week and travels along roads that are so wide, some places they're nearly as wide as the bus. But it's even more complicated than that, because most of these little roads let you get 9/10 of the way to your destination before thrilling you with a sign that says road closed. Diversion. Go back to where you started and try something else. Which means the journey from Newport to Ventnor is slightly more complicated than travelling across occupied France in 1941. Which, by coincidence, from the top of the hill on a clear day, you can imagine. But now, of course, the debate is whether you want to remain an island in as much as you're only accessible by crossing water, because there's an argument about whether you should build a tunnel or a bridge. So, what do we think here? Are we... Tunnel? Some tunnel, some bridge. Who wants nothing? Who wants neither?
Build a wall instead.
When Trump gets exiled, this is where he's coming. And who's going to pay for the wall? Sandown's going to pay for the wall. If there is a tunnel, it'd be exciting if it ended in Ventnor. It'd subside somewhere new every day. You wouldn't know where you were going to come out. It'd slip in a circle, you'd come back out and be in Portsmouth. Maybe you should surprise everyone by agreeing to a tunnel but digging it the other side and popping up in France. You could even arrange a little twist at the end so you came out upside down and thought, oh, I recognise it. But this issue seems to divide the island. There was a debate in the newspaper with a poll that showed 60% in favour of a tunnel and a comment section full of thoughtful debates such as this, right? Honestly. This was a real comment. So build a tunnel, and then anyone can pop over when they like to our nice, quiet little place to have a few break-ins and get home before anybody knows they've been burgled. This is a wonderful argument, that the reason people on the mainland want a tunnel to the Isle of Wight is so they can drive through and rob your houses and go back to Portsmouth. A burglar sat in Portsmouth thinking there are no houses to rob in Britain except on the Isle of Wight, and I can't get there because I'm scared of travelling over water. Because what have you got to nick here? There's nothing worth nicking. It's 1954. They'd get home. What did you get? I got some corned beef and a mangle. Someone wrote, a rail bridge would have tourism appeal that a tunnel doesn't. Where's a rail bridge going to go? They'd have to advertise it by saying, this globally astonishing rail bridge will propel you onto the wonderful transport hub of a 1930s underground train. Are the ferry companies popular? No. There's a, even when you have a little internal ferry, there's a ferry goes across the river, isn't there, Maureen? That's been a huge success, isn't it? According to the BBC website, the chain ferry broke down on Sunday, with stranded passengers forced to wade through water to the slipway. Isle of Wight Council said teething issues were being dealt with. I'm not a sailor. If you run a ferry and the passengers have to propel themselves through the water, that's quite a teething issue, isn't it? We have apologised for the part of the journey where passengers had to push their suitcases through the Solent while being stung by jellyfish. The first part of the journey went like a dream. According to a book I've got called A History of the Isle of Wight, at the turn of the 19th century, the island had 10 pleasure piers. So if you'd built them all in a line, you'd have had your bridge. But even a bridge wouldn't help with some problems, such as Amazon, who charge you extra for deliveries because you're judged as being outside Britain and part of Europe. That must be annoying when you voted specifically to leave it. And you're being penalised by a company called Amazon when you're identical to the jungle in the actual Amazon. You can't blame people for thinking the Isle of Wight's not in Britain. You've got a garlic farm up the road. Do you all know the garlic farm?
Yes.
It's obsessed with garlic there, as I suppose it would. But it's brilliant. Everything they've got is just packed full of garlic. There's garlic tomato sauce, garlic ice cream, garlic beer. You can probably get garlic bananas, garlic Ventolin inhalers. 3-piece sweets made out of garlic. Garlic dominatrixes that beat you on the arse with bulbs of garlic. There's a garlic recipe book there, and Ventnor gets a special mention with a recipe for Ventnor rock salmon that goes, marinate fish in lemon and cumin seeds, add 650 cloves of garlic, place in pan and leave outside in microclimate for 40 minutes. The most important role for the garlic farm could be its medicinal role, because the book claims that garlic is more effective than antibiotics, cures colds, prevents Alzheimer's, and its most well-known benefit is to fight off cancer with no side effects. I expected to go, if our farm had been around 65 million years ago, the Isle of Wight's dinosaurs would still be with us. There's a garlic festival. Cool, do you go to that? I think it's worth having the garlic festival for this reason. There must have been people who've come here for the Isle of Wight festival. But there's a consistency to you here, Ventnor, because you've been brilliant at selling yourself as a tourist resort. There was only a few dozen people here in the 1800s. It had just been a tiny village. And it was most famous because there was an attempted invasion here. An incident mentioned by the historian Dan Snow, you get on the telly, who said, I quote, one of many forgotten invasions of Britain took place in 1545 when the French landed in Ventnor, but fled when they saw the locals. In the 1800s, the microclimate was discovered, and then developers bought land and sold holidays here, boasting there is exactly the same atmosphere here as in the French Riviera. And that's true. It's uncanny how similar it is. The Ventnor Film Society at the Arts Club on a Tuesday is like the Cannes Film Festival. The pedalos on the beach are like the harbour at Nice. And seeing the bloke from the Bees in a wetsuit is exactly like spotting Katy Perry on a beach in Saint-Tropez. So then, a chest hospital was built here because it was believed the climate could cure TB, though the science behind that is fairly suspect, and now we know it's garlic that cures TB. Wikipedia says Ventnor was an ideal location for invalids with chest complaints. What sort of a sadist builds a chest hospital and sticks it at the top of Ventnor? When the bus drops you off down at the seafront, carry your bags up 700 steps to the top of the steepest cliff in Britain. That'll sort your chest out. Now, the first reviews of Ventnor were in the 1840s when a man called John Gwilliam wrote that the inhabitants of the town were a sickly, pale, attenuated race of ghastly debauchees. And then another review, which claimed to be a poem, described Ventnor, thou art so defiled with cockney villas, smirking bells, insipid gawky apes, and poor puny invalids. Yeah, rude, isn't it? I don't know that. I think it's a shame no one replied with their own poem. I always feel merry on the Isle of Wight ferry, 30 minutes by sea if you time it, where a piece of burnt toast fills the old Daily Post and kangaroos thrive in our climate. By the 1840s, agents from Savile Row were selling plots of land to the chicest holiday spot in Britain as it developed a reputation for its weather. And one trend was historical figures began to visit. The romantic poet Keats came here. Charles Dickens started David Copperfield here. Karl Marx came for a few months, and it was here that he wrote his famous preface to the Communist Manifesto. Many of you will know the passage that says, never has the working class found itself at the mercy of such naked exploitation as much as when it has to pay 90 quid to bring a car on the bloody ferry. Queen Victoria Victoria came to stay often in the Isle of Wight, and according to the local tourism website, she often spent months on the island and even died here. So there's something to boast about. 60 years she'd been on the throne, which meant she'd reigned long enough to see the Isle of Wight catch up with the time that she was crowned. One of the ironies about Queen Victoria being here is she didn't like garlic. I've never read that anywhere, but she can't have done, or she'd still be alive, wouldn't she? The Rastafarian Messiah, Emperor Haile Selassie, came to Ventnor during his exile from Ethiopia in 1938, and he is said to have given an interview in which he said, "Let me ask Babylon, when I look upon them sea, I is seeing Cherbourg upside down, floating them sky. How strong is them bumbaclot ganja asmore?" And Ventnor became one of the first beaches to operate bathing machines in which ladies could climb inside a sort of box thing which was wheeled into the water so they could take off some of their clothes and bobble in the water while inside the machine and nobody see anything bare, which is a marvellous attitude. Even ISIS only insists women should cover themselves with a bit of cloth, not a whole box. And, one day, it is recorded, a woman's bare ankle did slide outside the box and a couple from Freshwater had their kids removed from the beach as it made them come through. At this point, I'd like to introduce Jodie. Is Jodie about? Because, Jodie, you're from a family that goes back a great deal of time.
I am, yes.
In Ventnor, and particularly on the beach. Is that right?
I am. Our family's been on the beach since 1830.
Right, and so there are a number of families that have been...
There was the Blakes and there's the Spencers. There's only the Blakes that are there now.
Right, so did you see them off a bit like the Corleones?
best ones won, you know.
And was it sort of smuggling? Smuggling was the big thing.
We were Irish smugglers. We were Irish pirates and we came over and we got shipwrecked on the Isle of Wight. And that's why we're here.
That's cool. We were Irish pirates and smugglers.
We were heading for France, but we got all upside down. So.
But this was at the time that Jodie's family and the Blakes were sort of starting to build it up as a resort. Then this was when Ventnor became the Ventnor that we know, and it became famous and known as cultured, and the whole town designed to look classical. For example, I asked on Twitter if anyone had any experiences of Ventnor, and someone called Spodcast replied, "The public Kazi by Boots has lovely art deco floor and wall tiles." As I discovered when my son had an emergency poo there earlier this year. So how can anyone say there's nothing for kids to do round here? There's loads to do here for young people. Look at this article on a British telecom website called The Six Wonders of the Isle of Wight. It mentions Carisbrook Castle and the amount of garlic grown here, which is all interesting. I'm not sure it qualifies as wonders, but, you know. But one of the wonders of the Isle of Wight, it says, escalators are scarce. Until recently, the Isle of Wight had just one escalator. That's got to attract the youth, hasn't it? Mum, Dad, can we go to the Isle of Wight and enjoy the scarcity of escalators? Simon Haytack on Twitter wrote, "When BHS came to the Isle of Wight, we at last had our first escalator. People went up and down it all day." It must be fantastic being here. Brilliant. 60 years behind. You're so easily entertained. We're all going to Shanklin tomorrow. They've got something that makes clothes spin round and round on their own. It's hard to see why the young should feel they're not a priority here, especially when you get attitudes such as the one expressed in this letter to the Isle of Wight County Press. "I recently had the idea that if you were born on the island, you shouldn't be allowed to leave until you're 10. There is very little for a child to enjoy or learn from going to the mainland at such a young age. We took our 9-year-old grandson for his first trip off the island to attend the flower show, and he was miserable." "His mother believes it's because we took him to a gardening event, but I'm sure it's because he disliked the mainland." So, now, I'd love to introduce Emily from the County Press. So what other ones do you get in? You must love it when the letters come in.
Yeah, they are brilliant. There are some proper gems. We had a really good one recently about a guy who was scared of extra strong hand dryers.
Quite frightening. Now, what was his reasoning?
Well, he had this amazing phrase. He said, the air left imposing ripples in the flesh of his hands. And it really stuck with me. Every time I dry my hands, I can't help but think of it. I just think of Derek from Binstead. The best bit was that he sort of blamed the EU. Yeah.
What was the one about... There was a brilliant one about someone's MOT.
Oh, yeah, that was my MOT.
Oh!
My car failed its MOT because there was a squirrel, red squirrel, living in the bonnet. It's fine.
That's so brilliantly Isle of Wight.
Yeah, they put it on the MOT failure certificate as well, so just so I have a permanent record. It said, I had to clean out the engine bay of nuts, most likely used by a squirrel as storage.
Thanks very much for that, Emma. It's brilliant. It does feel everything in Ventnor has to be separate from the rest of the island and the rest of the country. Even your squirrels have to be different, living in cars. And Ventnor is all about red squirrels, not your normal, miserable grey ones the rest of Britain makes do with. In fact, there is a law. It is illegal to bring a grey squirrel into red squirrel territory. The penalty is 2 years imprisonment or a £5,000 fine. So there'd be someone in a cell, probably, in Parkhurst Prison up the road, where the craze went, what are you in for, Smudge? Smuggled a grey squirrel on the other car. I should add, there is one zoologist who has her own theory as to why your squirrel population diverges from the rest of the country, which is that the red paint ran out, so grey was used instead. They could just be grey squirrels that have got sunburnt in your microclimate. And you've got lizards here. Proper wall lizards, like when you're in Greece and that. According to an article in The Guardian, it is believed in the 1920s there were deliberate releases of the reptile, though local legend has it they are descendants of survivors from a shipwreck off Bonchurch. That wasn't your one, was it, Jodie? It's possible that it's from the shipwreck, though there are similar lizards in Jersey and northern France. So one possibility is that the lizards dug a tunnel and then and then came here to burgle insects off the Isle of Wight lizard. Of course there are lizards here. You had more dinosaurs than anywhere else. They were mostly the older Triassic dinosaurs, as the younger Jurassic ones left for Southampton as there was nothing here to do. And there is one further area in which the Isle of Wight is important to the Jurassic period, which is a team of researchers concluded in 2010 that dinosaurs became extinct within weeks of an asteroid hitting the Earth. And according to the scientists, the asteroid was the size of the Isle of Wight. So it's possible the asteroid was the Isle of Wight. All the dinosaurs were stood in one place and you just landed on all of them. And that's why all the fossils are here. There are loads of real wonders here. You've got a paddling pool shaped like the Isle of Wight, where you can hear parents shouting, don't stand on the Ventnor bit, it's got a microclimate, you'll burn your feet. You've got a mad cricket pitch. Do you know the mad cricket pitch?
Yes.
That's shaped like a bowl, so the fielders have to chase the ball up the steep hill to the boundary. You don't have to know the details of cricket to know that's not meant to happen. Except in Ventnor, because you hate doing the same as everybody else, and you don't feel right unless you've got a steep hill involved, even on a cricket pitch. I bet your snooker tables have got hills on them, and you have to pot the ball up 150 steps. And you've got, on the site of the now-demolished Chest Hospital, your famous botanic gardens. Now, usually a botanic garden is full of hothouses, so you can see tropical plants. But here, the garden's website tells us, many of our plants are native to the Andes Mountains of South America, but can be grown outside at the Ventnor Gardens due to our... And it's so tropical here, even the chief gardener, which you may have noticed at the Botanic Gardens, wears a Rastafarian hat, although he's white, because it's so humid here, dreadlocks grow naturally in this climate. Do you know the bloke?
Yeah.
Ollie.
Ollie? Surely it's all I. There is a hot house in the gardens to cool things down a bit. And in the hot house, they've got some giant Amazonian water lilies. And I thought, yeah, all right, I suppose. Very, you know, they're quite enigmatic, giant water lilies. And then as you leave, there's a short film that you see. The short film says, I watched it twice, so I could write it down exactly. These water lilies are unique in that they self-pollinate and change gender. So I hope that couple doesn't go there with their kids. They'll drag him straight out in case he jumps over the fence going, I'm confused, is it a man lily or a woman lily? Things or think things the way normal places do, Ben. You don't. For example, I'd like to introduce Kim, a celebrity across the island. Kim, who I met a little while ago, is a true celebrity across the island because it was Kim who had the grace to entertain everyone by burning a lasagna that filled a room with Kim, can you just run us through that momentous day? Was it terrifying?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a fire. No. Just a bit of smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in the oven for 3 hours, though.
But you weren't in at the time?
No, I went to the cinema.
Well, it's marvellous to be with this true celebrity in the news. Thank you very much, Kim. You don't think normally here, Ventnor. That's a good thing. I'll say that as a positive thing. The proof is the theme park known as Black Gang Chine. This is advertised as a land of imagination, and there are some brilliant features, like the crooked house that I went round. And the only thing is, because this is Ventnor, it was a normal house when it was built. It just subsided, and now, in fact, I bet half of you could charge people to come and look round your house. It's a crooked house, and people would be going, oh, it's ever so funny, halfway through the kitchen, there's a 6-foot drop, and you land in the sink. But then Black Gang Chine gets really weird, doesn't it? There are giant flying tadpoles in the trees. There's a talking bin that goes, come and give me rubbish. There's a massive moving purple fish in the bushes. There's a slow motion dinosaur that burps. It's not a theme park, it's the visions of a junkie. On a cliff. So over the years, some of the attractions have had to be brought away from the cliff edge because of landslips. They should have left them there. It would be the most authentic log flume in the world. Let's go on this ride, Mum. You sit on a bench and slide into the sea and have to be rescued by a helicopter. One part that was moved back was Underwater World, which is so Ventnor. To go to great lengths to stop your underwater world from ending up underwater. Even though if a child was underwater with a real octopus and a real whale, that would freak them out considerably less than the creatures in Underwater World. Now, we're very lucky tonight because Michelle's here. And Michelle very kindly showed us around Black Gang Chine. Do any of the kids come out terrified?
I think they're quite surprised as they come through, but they all love it.
They must love it because it's scary. It's really quite imaginative. I mean, how stoned are the designers?
We do have some interesting creative discussions, yeah.
Right.
We are the land of imagination.
Brilliant imagination. You can imagine France. Oh, it's brilliant. I think it's I'd recommend it. I wouldn't go in there if you're on antibiotics. Oh, thanks very much, Michelle. She's a brilliant host today. Now, here's one ride. I don't know about these things, but it just occurs to me there is one ride, because there's obviously roller coasters and things there, one ride that I think would be very, very popular. It's a sort of moving staircase that slowly goes up. So you don't need a tunnel or a bridge. That's my conclusion here. I don't think you need one. You're meant to be an island. Do you know there's an Isle of Wight space programme with a rocket testing station? The first ever radio was developed here by Marconi at the Needles. Maybe you're conning us all by pretending to be 60 years in the past. The Isle of Wight is racing into the future. Even your tropical climate shows you're a few years ahead of us when it comes to global warming. There's a dictionary compiled in 1886 for the Isle of Wight dialect that has words such as arcs for arse, the way young people say now. Maybe you're so far ahead of the rest of us, you were all talking like this in 1886, going, I ask what them doing this here man get chest mush up with TB. When a man chest get mush up with TB and shit him get a crib at hospital, you get me, fam, innit? It is beautiful and enigmatic here, and I love that it feels like you've had to make a lot of effort to get here, crossing the sea, then getting on medieval trains, winding through tiddly lanes, abseiling down Steep Hill Cove, even though you're only about 90...